The president of the Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, joins us on the telephone. Hello, Mr. Shapiro. How are you?
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Excellent. Tired?
Yes, so am I, man. Yes, I am.
I can imagine.
Yeah, you've got me at a low energy point. You have me vulnerable.
Yeah, well, good.
He's coming into pounce now.
Good.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different ways we can go with this. Categorize this trade deadline based on the many others that you have experienced. There's lots of talk, as there always is at a trade deadline. Lots of names are thrown around out there. Were there fewer guys in the mix? Were there more guys in the mix? Was the asking price really high for a lot of guys? In a general sense, compare it to past years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard when you got 25 past years to compare it to.
I get it.
I feel like the asking prices were surely higher than in recent years. I think that the return the Yankees got on the two players they traded, the two relievers they traded, as well as the initial price the Padres got for a rental player, you know, especially the two rental guys, I think that skewed and impacted. And there's always the question, as I said to one executive I was talking to, there's always a question, is that the price being paid or are those outlier deals? And you've got to ultimately internally frame, and we went into this obviously both with somewhat limited resources in terms of players, not money, but players, just due to the current state of the farm system, as well as a desire to keep, you know, the highest level prospects that we've got, but with the overarching desire to improve the team's chances to win now and deep into the postseason. So that's a challenge, especially with very, very limited options in the market where we needed it most, the starting pitching market.
Well, to that point, the one that intrigues me the most is obviously the Lariano deal. Now, did Pittsburgh make the first call? Did you make the first call? And how did that evolve?
Well, the very limited supply of short-term options or even options that could be acquired realistically, we called them. And I would say this to you that, and this is the one thing maybe fans don't get a true sense of, there wasn't a name mentioned at the highest levels and at the lowest levels that there is not a call made and interest shown. So sometimes we hear, hey, you just don't have the players to get that done. Sometimes we get an ask that just would not be realistic or in the best interest of this organization or this team. And sometimes you begin a dialogue that either, you know, leads somewhere else or gets a trade done. And so, you know, among the due diligence calls that we looked at, the Pirates were in the mix.
That was a deal that was done at about 3:59 yesterday, right before the deadline.
And 3:59 and 40 seconds.
There you go.
Yeah.
Was it a long conversation, or was it one of those last-minute, last-hour kinds of out-of-the-blue deals?
I mean, the lifespan of that deal is a lot like others. It's amazing how deadlines have a way of bringing things to a head, but that deal was talked about probably over the span of the weekend, probably died a couple times and then came back to life and different iterations. The iteration we ultimately completed was really began between Neil Huntington and Ross very late, probably with just an hour and a half. So obviously Liriano's name, Hutch's name, very different, variables and variations around those two.
The intriguing thing about Liriano, as we have noted, and many others have, is his performance when Russ was his catcher in Pittsburgh. I assume you are aware of that. That's a stat that you were aware of. You take that into consideration. How far would you go with that? Would you go and talk to Russ Martin?
Yes.
And you did, huh?
Yeah, Ross did. And I think, you know, where we want to be careful is not putting too much of the on the role of Russ. I think when you're making a trade, you're talking to every human you can possibly talk to, clubhouse guys, trainers, you're gathering information from past coaches, and certainly whenever you have a player that's been in a clubhouse or played with a guy, you're going to talk mostly about the kind of teammate he is, the kind of work ethic he's got, the kind of competitor he is. In the case of Liriano, it was, certainly was, you know, what do you think of his performance this year? What do you think the differences are from when you caught him? So there were things that Russ said, along with work that we did from a video perspective, that led us to believe that, combined with his work ethic and his competitiveness and the fact that his stuff has not declined, that being very important, that we felt there was the opportunity to get him going along with the upside in a very, very mediocre starting pitching market, that if we could get him turned around, as Ross said yesterday, he could be a guy that could start a playoff game for you.
Did you find something in the video evidence, or the coaches find something in the video evidence that said, you know, if we do this, if we tweak this, we think we can help his control?
Well, I mean, the Pirates are among the best in the game
at pitching
mechanics.
Yeah.
So, yes, we found things we thought might help, but I would say that, there may not be an organization more admired. That being said, sometimes a different voice, sometimes a different coach, sometimes a different environment, or what a guy needs in order to apply the things he's heard, and you just don't know. And, again, this is a guy that we have not just for this year and beyond. If we can get him right this year, not only can he be part of the equation to help get us there, he could be a part of the equation in the playoffs. If not, we still feel good that he's a guy that can help us, next year, and we would be back out in that starting pitching market next year, which is not a very good market.
With Mark Shapiro, the Blue Jays president, before the Liriano deal, you acquire a couple of pitchers in Feldman and Bolsinger.
Yes.
And at the time, we were opining, well, how are they going to use these guys?
We didn't think Bolsinger the way we're using him right now.
Meaning? You expected him at the major league?
14 innings last night. We thought he would be a guy we'd get down to the minor leagues, get starting. And when we did the Bolsinger deal, we were rapidly, moving on the Hutch deal, and we thought this is perfect. He can backfill Hutch, projects to have similar performance as Hutch, although a very different pitcher, and provides another starting alternative for us this year and beyond.
Well, they're both guys that have started and both guys that have been in the bullpen. So I think that's the intriguing question for me. Before Liriano is signed, which of these two guys is more likely to go into the rotation? In fact, Sanchez goes to the bullpen, which has a better track record as a starting pitcher, do you fancy them as relievers or starters? And then the Liriano deal kind of took that kind of off the table. Had you decided how to use these two guys?
Well, I think we thought, that the two deals played together, that Feldman backfilled Chavez, a guy whose numbers and stuff and results and the quality of the contact factored very well in the middle relief role, but that there was versatility. He had started 5 games this year. He had started, obviously, a lot of games in his career. We kind of looked at him as a middle guy that could also have the upside to get meaningful outs. Last night was unfair to him. We brought him in and had him down last night because he had thrown 50 pitches the day before, but we had to use him in a tough situation. But we really do feel like this is a guy that, can pitch meaningful innings. We bring into this environment another guy that's battle-tested, another guy with both postseason experience, and, we can put in the mix with Gurriel and Benoit that we feel like really provides some experience in the middle relief area of the bullpen, gives us length, and certainly, if needed, could start. That's the way I would look at him.
We saw some starting pitchers move. Miley goes to Baltimore. Hill, who, still is encountering blister problems, goes to the Dodgers. Matt Moore goes to the San Francisco Giants. But we never saw that blockbuster with starting pitchers. Was that more from your negotiations or what you understand, more the fact that they just weren't available, or the fact that the asking price was just too enormous?
I would say this. I always look at it like everybody's, to say someone's unavailable, it's just not realistic, right? I mean, it's inconceivable that some deals would get done, but at some level, everybody's available. And that's where media speculation and fan speculation can kind of get rumors going. So my guess is that the biggest names you heard are guys that probably were never really realistically going to get traded. But once that happens, every one of us calls and feels the need to do the due diligence. The prices paid for Matt Moore and for Rich Hill, in my mind, were blockbuster level of prices. Whether or not those players pitch like that, it remains to be determined, right?
Yep.
But those prices paid, the price that San Francisco paid, the price, you know, that the Dodgers paid for Hill and Reddick, those are, you know, they're deep farm systems and they're, you know, successful franchises, but those were steep prices.
So let me ask you this. Every team in Major League Baseball understands the Toronto Blue Jays are a competitive team, a team with a chance to get to the postseason, a chance to win a World Series. And so they would understand that you are more likely, you're not going to be a seller, you're going to be a buyer. But do you get phone calls about your starting eight or your starting pitchers or ace bullpen guys?
Not at this juncture. Not at this juncture. I mean, now in the off season, maybe with some creative big ideas.
Yeah.
Not saying the conversations don't ever kind of rotate. The biggest couple of names that were thrown out there, the comment back might be, we're not even going to begin a conversation unless it's two starters off your major league team and your best two, that kind of thing.
Does the fact that you have three rather significant starters in entering their free agent year, did that raise any questions from other teams?
In which we have a lot of guys entering their free agent.
Well, you got three starters, meaning Encarnacion, Batista, and
Saunders.
Right.
Did those guys, because they're free agents? I'm not asking you to be specific.
No one. That doesn't. I think if people deem you to have a surplus in an area, they might inquire. But no, I mean that again, people. And listen, I don't know. I'm hard to give you unequivocal answers. In the game, a lot of it hinges on the relationships, right? So if I'm talking to Brian Cashman or Billy Bean, I've got 25 years of talking to those guys.
Yeah.
It might be a lot looser, but, you know, Ross having all those conversations with all those other guys, it's, for five or six other, Matt Klentak and Billy Epler, it's the first time Ross is talking to the first time those guys are having those conversations. So. Yeah. It's much more of a feeling out process, and everyone's respectful. And I think you maybe over time, it's a little easier to get a little more comfortable in the creativity or the efficiency of conversations, which I think Ross will happen with Ross as well. But the amazing the amount of work Ross was able to and the group here was able to get done in a short period of time, and going from. Really nothing alive as we left here Sunday evening to, get a ton getting done on Monday. And obviously, it's the work leading up to that leads to that.
Mike wants to jump in here, and I'll let him do that right after this. I'm intrigued by the groundwork that might be done, perhaps inadvertently, at this time of year, and what that might lead to, let's say, during the off season.
Right, right.
Did that happen?
It absolutely happens. I think that's a good observation that we, like every team, we track every conversation, we track interest in players. And then as you get going in conversations, you always go back and revisit, hey, who else had interest in this guy? And,
right.
As you're creatively looking to fill holes, and when we sit down at the end of season meetings and baseball operations leads us through both an internal look at our team, a look at our system, a look at the free agents, a look at trades. We start to put down a strategy for next year. That strategy will involve some of the conversations that we had, and some of the ideas we come up with will certainly stem from trade deadline conversations.
When you look back at what transpired yesterday, when you took over, you made the point that, farm system needed to be augmented. The fact that you could make a Lariano deal and get two prospects in McGuire and I believe it's Rodriguez, who are ranked
Ramirez,
who are two of the top 10 ranked Pirates farmhands. Does that kind of come across as a little bit of a bonus?
So I would say this. I think maybe there was some confusion when I came in by talking about the desire to improve the farm system. It's never being done, certainly at junctures like this, at the compromise of wanting to win a World Series,
yeah,
and the urgency of wanting to win now. That being said, we as a baseball organization need to operate with a very high sense of awareness that every and any single opportunity to infuse talent into this organization is absolutely essential and necessary. And I say that with the ultimate material example for the fans of look what the Cubs, the Indians, the Rangers, look what they were able to do with the trade deadline. And I think it's absolutely essential for us to both balance, you know, young talent on our major league team, along with having a healthy and vibrant farm system. Not because I want to have a healthy and vibrant farm system for that sake alone, but because I think the ability to sustain a championship caliber team, which we absolutely should do here, is completely dependent on having, you know, that productive system. So that byproduct of adding talent yesterday, although not a primary goal at all in this deadline, was kind of the offshoot of productive conversations. And I think just an added bonus and benefit, and not something we ever thought would happen. But when we look up and say we added two players that, you know, were at different times in top 100 of all Major League Baseball and immediately go into our top 10, that's a positive side benefit of yesterday of the trade deadline.
With Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro. On that note, are you over budget? Did you have to go to Rogers to get more money?
Well, again, we're not over budget, but yes, you know, we went. We had a meeting with you know, all of the main players at Rogers that you know, oversee our business, from, you know, Rick Brace to the CEO level to Edward Rogers, all the different people that are engaged. And we had a long conversation both about our revenue, which is obviously a piece of it because it is a business, as well as the opportunity that exists here. And without, you know, quantifying it, I think everybody was extremely supportive of doing what it takes to maximize the window. And when I say supportive, it wasn't just moral support, like a slap on the butt and a clap. It was, you know, here are the financial resources to do what you need to do. And think that, you know, that was clear in what we did, you know, over the deadline period, starting at BJ Upton and moving forward. And that will remain clear because we still have some flexibility as we go through August should the opportunity present itself.
All right, let's get to the core of the conversation that I've been having for the last few months.
There's something else to talk about?
Yeah, well, that Aaron Sanchez guy, who's pretty good, you may have heard of him. You know, who might be, he would certainly be in the top three in terms of Cy Young balloting if you were going to do a ballot right now. That's how good he has been. And I don't think, as you know, as much as I was high on Aaron Sanchez from the time I saw him in Dunedin until watching him last year and then this year, you know, nobody could have expected this. And that has created a more complicated situation than if this guy was 5-5 and a 4 ERA and, you know, looked like a nice pitcher and whatever. But having said that, the decision has been made to move Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen to protect his arm in the event because of his innings pitched situation. It raises a whole whack of questions. But the most interesting thing that's happened here, Mark, over the last little while in talking to players and talking to people in the organization is I have sensed a move towards the notion that more and more guys in the organization are of the opinion that keeping Sanchez in the rotation might be, well, not might be, would be advantageous. We understand why, and I'm not here to argue that point, but did you make this decision at the beginning of the year and are you sticking to it? Or did you defer your decision on this?
All of us in the beginning of the year, from Aaron to Pete Walker to Gibby to Ross, every person involved to our performance staff, and you know, everybody said there's no way this guy can go past a certain juncture. That, you know, he's going to be the first man on the moon to go where no player's ever gone and spike in innings. You know, even if he gets through that at some point, you know, what are the tangible side effects of that on him as a player? So it's always a balance of what's the right thing for Aaron Sanchez, personally him, regardless of what he may feel in the competitive moment, what's the right thing for our team's chances to win, and balancing those things. Again, it's do you let him start and then shut him down completely regardless of what that number is, if that number is 180, 190, 195, whatever, regardless of what the number is, does he get shut down and not contribute any more at all past that point? Does that, you know, squelch the emotions of the moment, but then create a bigger loss when that happens? Or, you know, do you not shut him down, but reallocate his impact, his ability to leverage his talent on the game in the highest crucial moments, and pitch him out of the bullpen? And we haven't determined yet, you know, what the right time is, what the right approach is, or even definitively. At some point, he's not going to start anymore this year. He will not run 230 innings and pitch through October. That's not going to happen. That can't happen. That would be, no one in their right mind, including him, would suggest that can happen. So at some point, you have to decide, how do you allocate those innings? What's the most respectful thing and the appropriate thing to do for this young man? And what's the most, and how do you balance that with our, all of our insatiable desire to win a world championship?
All right, so let me give you another scenario. One I assume you've discussed, maybe dismissed offhand, but one that has occurred to me. Is it even possible that you shut him down as a starter a little bit early, mm-hmm. move him into the bullpen, and if and when you get to that point where the postseason looms, you bring him back as a starter? Is that even a possibility?
It's almost not possible for anyone, not just a young pitcher.
I get it.
Yeah, so I think that's something. Obviously, you're right. We've talked about every scenario. You know, that's probably one that we feel would put him even at more risk and danger.
So there's no way to stretch him out late in September so that he could give you four or five innings as a starter in the postseason?
Four or five innings, but I'm not sure that'd be the, again, I might argue that two innings in the seventh and eighth inning in the highest leverage situation could be more valuable. And I think when you look at some of the analytical research done, five of the ten most valuable players based on their value added to teams' chances to win are actually, you know, closers, so, or back-end bullpen guys. So I think you're, again, you look at the when guys like him pitch in high leverage situations, they might have a bigger impact on a game and more games.
On another note, we see that Tulowitzki is not in the lineup tonight, but we did see him fielding some ground balls yesterday before the game. Any timeline here? Is this just a situation where, you know what, there's no reason to rush him right now because he's going to be such a big part moving forward?
If we felt rushing him would help, we would rush him.
Okay.
So, but we're working off of his tolerance. He is better today than he was yesterday.
Yep.
And I think we're confident, or relatively confident, as much as you can in the uncertain realm of the human body, that it's not going to be a DL situation. But, you know, obviously it's not, you know, I in my mind, it can't happen quick enough because this guy was one of our hottest and best hitters.
Yeah.
Certainly one of our best all-around players, and we're better off with him on the field. So, yes, we want him to get out there.
Last question. You have six starters right now. You have not come up with a date where you will get down to five. I'm sure this is a Gibby decision
saving
to a great extent.
Saving the best for last.
Well, what are you going to do with six starters?
I'll let you know.
When?
Are you telling me you don't want to tell me, or are you telling me you haven't decided?
When it's time, I'll let you know.
Right. You're going to let Bob know first then, right?
No. Absolutely, like I always do.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Except that usually he doesn't answer when I call, so yeah, I'm always calling to give it to him. He just doesn't answer.
I'm right here, pal, anytime you want to talk. Come on over, we'll have a cold one.
Good.
Thank
you on right now.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate
right,
your time,
thanks,
as always,
Mark.
Pal.
Good
bye-bye.
Talking to you. Bye.
Mark Shapiro, the president of the Toronto Blue Jays.